In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups, the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
With the first pick in the 2007 NBA draft, the Portland Trailblazers select Kevin Durant from the University of Texas.
Hello out there, and welcome to the first episode of Basketball Court. I'm your host, Peter Andrews, and I'm the presiding judge here in the U.S. District Court for the District of Basketball. I'm joined tonight by our two faux counselors who will be sparring with each other in the weeks and months to come. That's Miles Johnson.
Hey, everybody.
And Sam Tidings.
How's it going, Your Honor?
I like that. I like the way that sounds. There are pivotal moments in every sport, moments to change the very landscape of what's to come. Think about David Tyree making his helmet catch, Bill Buckner letting the ball get through his legs, or Ray Allen sinking a corner three in Game 6 of the Finals. But what would have been if, say, Eli Manning got sacked before he had a chance to get the ball upfield? What if the Red Sox held on to that 10th inning lead? And perhaps most interestingly, what if Ray Allen's corner three had hit back rim? These questions are especially pertinent in basketball, where every single bounce counts, and a difference in inches can determine who gets sports immortality and who doesn't. Sam, Miles, and I are, let's be honest, three sports nerds who needed a greater arena to toss around our what-ifs and hot takes, and that's why we've established the Basketball Court. Each week, or whenever we end up deciding to record, we'll be debating and litigating a famous moment where the NBA was at a crossroads. We'll break down the ramifications of the original result, and our two counselors will each present an alternate NBA timeline of what would happen if things had gone differently. Now, along with additional guest judges, I will decide at the end of the episode who had the most compelling argument. What's my authority? I'm the only one here who is currently in law school. I think we can all agree that that's the case.
Yeah, you're instantly more qualified.
Yeah, absolutely.
So before we get started, I just want to say you can follow the show on iTunes. Make sure you subscribe. We have a Facebook page, and you can follow us on Twitter at Basketball Court Pod. There you'll be getting info about each episode, tons of extra content. That's hashtag content. But you know what? Enough of this. Let's get into today's episode with our first case here in Basketball Court.
With the first pick in the 2007 NBA draft, the Portland Trailblazers select Kevin Durant from the University of Texas.
On June 28, 2007, the Portland Trailblazers found themselves with the number one pick in the NBA draft. Coming off a 32-50 season, returning Brandon Roy and LaMarcus Aldridge, the Blazers had a chance to set up the core of a competitor if they made the right draft pick. And yet they didn't, by picking Ohio State center Greg Oden. Oden missed what would have been his rookie year and ended up playing just 82 games with the Blazers, averaging under 10 points a game. Not what you're looking for at the number one overall pick. Sitting behind them at number two, the Seattle Supersonics, a team embroiled in turmoil. The team finished at 31-51 and were due for a rebuild. They had also just been sold to Clay Bennett, who was hell-bent on moving the squad to Oklahoma City. On draft night that year, the Sonics traded veteran guard Ray Allen to the Celtics in a package for the number four pick in the draft, which was Jeff Green, and 2 weeks later would sign and trade free agent forward Rashad Lewis to the Magic. And they opted to rebuild around their number two pick, which was Kevin Durant from the University of Texas. Now, you all know where the story goes from there. The Blazers top out as a mid-level playoff team in the West, and the Thunder put together one of the most talented rosters in basketball, although to this date they have yet to break through and win that elusive title. However, now Miles and Sam are going to take us down two alternate timelines. We're both looking to answer the question of what if the Blazers had taken Kevin Durant, number one overall, on that June night in 2007. All right, so Basketball Court is now in session. We have done a very official coin toss, and using my authority as a judge here in Basketball Court, Sam, you have 15 minutes to make your case.
Thank you, Your Honor. My timeline doesn't have that many changes in the 2007 draft. Just Kevin Durant going to the Blazers at one, Greg Oden to the Supersonics at two. The rest of the draft remains the same. So what does that mean for the NBA going forward? Well, in 2007-2008, Kevin Durant is the Rookie of the Year, this time with the Portland Trail Blazers. The Blazers are pretty good. They win over 45 games. They do just miss the playoffs by a couple games. Seattle finishes with the worst record in the NBA. Oden misses the whole season. They move to Oklahoma City. Everyone is very upset with them. We're going to check in on them in a couple years. So 2008 offseason, Seattle's going to end up drafting Westbrook before they move and going to end up with Ibaka, just like they did in real life. The Blazers, though, are going to really need a center now if they don't have Greg Oden on the roster. So they're going to draft Roy Hibbert since he is going to be on the board when they draft, and they are not going to include him in a trade to Indiana. So the next season, the Blazers have a lineup of Steve Blake, Brandon Roy, Kevin Durant, Marcus Aldridge, and Roy Hibbert. That's a pretty good team on paper, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So the Blazers are going to go ahead, and they're just going to win 59 games that first year with the whole team together. They're going to be the number two seed in the West. They're going to beat Chris Paul in New Orleans in the first round. They're going to beat Carmelo Anthony in Denver in the conference semifinals. They're going to lose the Western Conference Finals to the Lakers in seven games. And the Thunder, on the other hand, Oden's going to play more games. Westbrook is just a turnover machine. They're going to end up with the third worst record in the NBA. They're going to win the lottery, and they're going to draft hometown kid Blake Griffin. He's from Oklahoma, went to school at Oklahoma. Everyone's excited, but then he misses the whole first year due to an injury. So 2009-2010, Oklahoma City's still not a playoff team. The Blazers are going to win over 60 games. They're the number one seed in the playoffs. But Brandon Roy misses the first round with a knee injury. He comes back for their conference semifinal series. But the team just doesn't gel as well. They do win that second round series, but once again they lose to the Lakers, this time losing Game 7 at home. A lot of heartbreak there at the Rose Garden. So 2010 offseason, Oklahoma City is feeling a lot of pressure to make the playoffs. And they're going to draft Cole Aldridge, just like they did in real life. And everyone needs them to stop drafting big men. Everyone's all mad at Sam Presti. So he goes and does a little work in free agency, signs Earl Watson to mentor Westbrook and their other draft pick, Eric Bledsoe. He also signs Kyle Korver to add some spacing on the outside. Also that offseason, well, LeBron and the whole super team goes to Miami. Kevin Durant signs a max extension, but this time he's going to stay with Portland through the 2015-2016 season. Sounds a little familiar?
A little bit. Mr. Tice, I did want to just, in terms of familiarity, so sum up for us, what does the Oklahoma City starting five look like here in your timeline versus what happened in reality?
So what they have going into 2010-11 is Steve Blake, Brandon Roy, Durant, Aldridge, and Roy Hibbert, with Nick Batum coming off the bench in that 3-4 spot. Instead of a lineup of Steve Blake, Brandon Roy, LaMarcus Aldridge, and assorted garbage, including Marcus Camby. So,
and then how about for the Thunder?
And on the Thunder side, it's Westbrook, Cephalosha, Jeff Green, Blake Griffin, and Serge Ibaka is the center, along with Nick Collison, Nenad Krstić, Eric Bledsoe's coming off the bench. So definitely an interesting roster, not as potent without Durant, but you can see where they have some talent.
And, of course, Greg Oden is injured somewhere.
Greg Oden is still injured. He misses the entire 2010-11 season as well. What a segue that was. And at the deadline, Oklahoma City is in a playoff position. They're going to add to it by adding Shane Battier at the trade deadline. There's no Jeff Green for Kendrick Perkins trade, thank God. On the Blazers' side, Brandon Roy misses most of this season, but he's going to come back for the playoffs. And the Blazers really need a guard since their lineup is so big. I mean, Kevin Durant's playing exclusively the three. Aldridge is the four. Hibbert can't play anywhere but the five. So they're going to find a way to put themselves in this Knicks-Nuggets trade for Carmelo Anthony, and they're going to pick up Raymond Felton before he got fat, which is very important. They give up some future picks and some cash. So they're rolling with a lineup going into the playoffs. Raymond Felton and Roy, Durant, Aldridge, Hibbert, Batum coming off the bench. Roy comes back at the start of the playoffs. There's no trade for Gerald Wallace in this alternate timeline. But Portland has the number one seed for the second straight year. Oklahoma City gets in as the sixth seed. They knock off the Spurs in the first round somehow, but they lose to the Lakers in six in the conference semis. Now there's no Kendrick Perkins, so they can't really deal with football and injury on the side. Portland knocked off Memphis in the first round with James Harden, Mike Conley, Zach Randolph, and Marc Gasol. Then they beat Dallas in the second round, that is the incredible Dirk season, don't forget. Then they finally beat the Lakers in a seven-game series. Durant has a huge game seven, but they're all worn out from all these seven-game series, so they lose to the Miami Heat in six games in the 2011 NBA Finals.
So you're saying that, what you're telling me is that if the Blazers had picked Durant instead of Oden, Miami gets their championship 1 year earlier.
Exactly. That is exactly what I'm telling you. And that everyone somehow hates LeBron more than they do already. Because imagine if he had gone into that first season in Miami and actually won, and everyone didn't get a chance to laugh at him at the end of that season.
So you think the humility is like an important thing that he picked up?
No, I think now he's just, in my alternate timeline, he's just a super villain.
Ah, gotcha. All right, I'm curious to see where you go from here.
I sure hope you are, because right after this we have the lockout. And at the end of the lockout, Brandon Roy retires in his amnesty, so the Blazers have a little extra cash in their cap. So they're going to pick up Chauncey Billups and Richard Hamilton in free agency, two guys who signed on the cheap coming out of that lockout in 2011. Oklahoma City amnesties Greg Oden, so he's officially done. So their regular lineup right now is Westbrook, Cephalosha, Green, Griffin, and Ibaka, with Bledsoe and Collison coming off the bench. So we go into the lockout year, and Portland ends up as the one seed, the Thunder end up as the three seed. Portland gets through their first two series really easily. Oklahoma City holds off Denver, and then they beat San Antonio in six because Westbrook has just an incredible series. And so in the Western Conference Finals, it's Portland and Oklahoma City. It's Kevin Durant and the ghost of Greg Oden going at it one-on-one. Portland takes game one easily. Thunder come back and take games two and three. Game four is the Kevin Durant show. He goes off for 41, and the Blazers tie up the series. Blazers win game five back at home, and then Durant hits, oh, let's just say a game-winning three-pointer over Blake Griffin in game six, and the Blazers go back to the NBA Finals. They're playing the Heat again because even in this alternate timeline, there's no one else who's any good in the East. And you know what? I am actually going to say that this is one of the better NBA Finals. We remember this as like a Jordan versus the Jazz sort of deal. A real back-and-forth series. Durant is having a huge series, and the Blazers are winning the series until Durant just puts up a total stinker in Game 6, and LeBron goes off for like 30, totally locks him down. And so we go to Game 7 in Miami. Durant and LeBron going back and forth. They each have 35 going into the final minute. Roy Hibbert, that rim protection finally comes through. He blocks a driving James, even though LeBron's crying for a foul. On the other end, Durant hits a shot, and on the final possession, it is Dwayne Wade who takes the last shot for the Heat. He shakes Wes Matthews, but his shot hits the rim, no good. LaMarcus Aldridge grabs the rebound, hits two free throws. The Blazers are the world champions of 2012, and Kevin Durant is the Finals MVP.
So what is it about the alternate timeline Blazers? What do they have that the real-life Thunder didn't have that year? Because obviously the Thunder can't hang with the Heat in that Finals.
Rim protection, I think, is the big difference. If you look at those series that LeBron had against Tyson Chandler when it was the Heat against the Mavericks, the series he had against Roy Hibbert when it was the Heat and the Pacers, that anytime there's a series where there's just someone standing directly under the rim that's keeping LeBron from getting there, it really screws up his team's offense. And I'm going to just argue that Aldridge is good enough to hang with Chris Bosh, and that the Blazers are going to be just good enough in a tight series to be better than that Heat team.
All right.
So we go to the 2012 offseason, and the Blazers have this logjam in the front court, like I said, because they have Durant, they have Aldridge, they have Hibbert, all those guys are on big deals or are about to be on big deals. So what happens to Nick Batum? He's sort of the odd man out. They're going to trade him and Wes Matthews to the Nets, who are looking to add some star talent alongside Darren Williams before they move to Brooklyn. Their only real asset to give up is the number 8 pick in the draft. And the Blazers, who have that 8 pick, need a point guard, and they draft Damian Lillard. So we sort of have the two timelines meshing here. And on the other end, the Thunder need to upgrade their wings scoring a little bit. They're going to trade Jeff Green, some filler, a future first to Denver for Danilo Gallinari. So we go to 2012-2013. Portland's the one seed. Oklahoma City is the three seed again. Westbrook is going to be healthy through the playoffs since Patrick Beverley is not on the other side, thank God. But this time the Thunder are going to lose to the Spurs. Portland is going to beat the Spurs in the conference finals. Blazers Heat 3. And Portland has home court advantage, and they're going to win that series in six. Durant with Finals MVP again. He's got a couple 40-point games in there, like a 45-point game on 23 shots, something crazy like that. The Blazers go back-to-back against the Heat.
Wow. You've really constructed a juggernaut here.
yes, I really have constructed a juggernaut here. And it was right there for you, Portland. But it was not to be. So it's 2013-14. Durant wins his second straight MVP. The Blazers are the one seed again. Oklahoma City picks up some shooters at the trade deadline with Kyle Korver. And so now they're the two seed behind, of course, Westbrook, who's become Russell Westbrook, and Blake Griffin, who's really starting to blossom as well. They had the two seed, and they go head-to-head with the Thunder again in the conference finals. Oklahoma City has a 3-2 lead, Game 6 at home at the peak, but Kevin Durant is just way too much. They have no one who can defend him on the perimeter, and he just blows them out the next two games. Portland goes back to the finals. Guess who's on the other side again? Miami. This series is just not close. Portland sweeps Miami. They're totally blown out of the water. Durant now is 25 years old. He has three rings. And the other sort of side note to that is that Miami sort of has this small ball, positionless basketball revolution. It's kind of just pushed aside as a fad now. LeBron's lost three straight finals. He's been shut down. And guys like Roy Hibbert and Aldridge and Durant, it's just a huge lineup that nobody can really compete with. And we move on to the 2014 offseason. LeBron wants to shake things up. He still ends up going back to Cleveland. Durant, I'm not going to pretend to know anything about medicine, so in my alternate timeline, injuries are injuries. Durant hurts his foot, and the Thunder are the presumed favorites out west, along with the Grizzlies, who, remember, it's Conley, Harden, Randolph, and Gasol, and the Warriors. So 2014-15, Damian Lillard's leading the charge. The Blazers finish fifth, so okay. They get taken out in the first round. The Thunder, now there's no Enes Kanter or Deion Waiters trades. They meet the Warriors in the conference finals, but Curry has an incredible Curry series to overcome Westbrook's Westbrook series. The Warriors beat the Thunder in five, then they beat the Cavs in six.
So you see the Warriors are still the Warriors.
I'm going to say the Warriors are still going to have Mark Jackson. Then they're going to fire him for Steve Kerr, and Steph Curry is going to have or went off in his head last offseason. It's still going to go off, and he is just going to become this incredible machine, along with Draymond Green, who's a guy who can down someone like Blake Griffin, as we've seen in real life, just in a different uniform. So I'm still going to have the Warriors being this incredible juggernaut and beating the Cavs in six.
So, Mr. Tidings, we are running out of time for you. Do you want to wrap up your argument?
I will wrap up my final argument here in the 2015 offseason. Aldridge is going to sign a 2-year deal with an opt-out to stay in Portland, as does Roy Hibbert. Lillard signs a rookie max extension to stay, but everyone is putting those opt-outs in case Kevin Durant leaves at the end of the summer. Thunder are kind of desperate. They need someone else to take the pressure off of Westbrook and Griffin, so they're going to blow the rest of their cap space on Monte Ellis. So they're going to go to war with the lineup of Westbrook, Ellis, Griffin, and Ibaka. Eric Bledsoe is still leading the bench unit for at least the next two seasons. Rumor has it Portland's been trying to unload Roy Hibbert, but we'll see what comes of that.
I can't imagine why they'd want to do that.
I know, right? So we come to the present day. The timelines merge. You've got the Warriors, the Spurs, the Thunder, the Blazers, all coming out hot out of the gates. Harden struggling a little bit with the Grizzlies, but they're still there as a potential playoff opponent as well, and I guess we're just going to have to wait and see what happens next, guys.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Tidings, for your very Kevin Durant pro argument there. It's a good way to get him some rings. Let's flip it over to Mr. Johnson, who has constructed a different alternate timeline, which I'm sure differs from yours in interesting ways. Mr. Johnson, the floor is yours.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor.
I gotta say, I really like you guys calling me that. That's like the highlight of this podcast.
Nice. So the big thing to remember with the 2007 draft is that Sam Presti is a pretty big piece on the chessboard here. And what I mean by that is I think Portland takes Kevin Durant number one overall, but I think that Seattle skips Greg Oden to select the two-time NCAA championship ring holder and like all-around great center Al Horford. And so Greg Oden slips
objection.
To number
objection,
three.
Objection, Your Honor. I object.
All right, so Sam, what's your objection here?
My objection is that why are they passing on this incredible freshman center, I might add, for the older sort of power forward when how is that going to affect things the rest of the way also?
So
I find your thought process a little curious there, Counselor.
Yeah, so Mr. Johnson, the way we're going to do objections in this fantasy courtroom is you explain yourself and then I decide whether or not it's an acceptable, like I can strike parts of your timeline, but I'm going to be pretty lenient with that particular power. So let's see. So why do you see Al Horford coming in here?
Can I ask which question did opposing counsel? Which was the question here? Was it why would Preston do this?
Or passing on Odin for Horford? That is my question.
Yes. So this isn't any NBA GM, right? Like if this was Ernie Grunfeld, then I'd say, yeah, he probably takes Greg Oden because it's a sure thing. He was highly touted coming out of Ohio State. And like you mentioned, it's going to be younger than Horford coming out into the draft. But when we're talking about Sam Presti, we're talking about somebody who is unconventional, I think, to say the least, and somebody that makes pretty big risk moves. And whether those are going to have high payouts or not, you know, has differed in the past, whether that's the 2007 trade sending Ray Allen to Boston for Jeff Green and Wally Szczerbiak and Delonte West, I think something that most people will consider to be a good trade. Or in that same year where they sent Carl Landry to Houston for someone who ended up being Sasha Khan, who I don't think ended up playing. I don't think he ended up playing any games in the NBA. So
I think he's on the Cavs now or someone, yeah.
Is he? Yeah, so but the big point here is Sam Presti is a guy who, like in real life when we saw with Russell Westbrook taken at number four, is a guy that doesn't make the obvious move every time. And I think the thing that is important, I think he sees something in Oden that he doesn't like and would much rather take Horford, who at that time I think a lot of people would have argued was a better passer, probably had a better, more fundamentally sound offense. Sure, Oden at the time I think had a higher ceiling, but I think Presti makes an unprecedented and a move that he's like, you know, maligned for. I think a lot of people come out and, you know, definitely question this. But if it makes any sense as in terms of comparison, I'd liken this to the Kristaps Porzingis pick this past year.
Well, I think I do think it's a close call as to whether or not this is plausible. But I'm going to say, you know, a plausible claim should be allowed to continue. I'm going to overrule the objection and. Mr. Johnson, you are welcome to proceed with Al Horford on the Sonics.
Sure. So, again, Durant's in Portland. Seattle has taken Horford, and the Hawks have taken Greg Oden. So, with that being said, 2007-2008 season has the Sonics winning 31 games. I have the Blazers winning 45 games, and the Hawks only eking out 28 games. All three teams missed the playoffs. I'm going to also, like opposing counsel, come back to the Sonics and the Hawks because I don't have them either of them making the playoffs for several years, but I do have some interesting things coming up for Portland. So 2008 offseason, Portland is now Oklahoma. Once again, sorry to the Sonics fans. And going into the 2008-2009 season, Durant, this is his second year now, and I guess I should also mention that he does win Rookie of the Year in his rookie year. But the Blazers are awesome this year. Durant is even more used to the big stage. You've got a front that looks like Kevin Durant, Brandon Roy, LaMarcus Aldridge. Really, really great offensively. And I have them winning 57 games and finishing second in the West. Unlike Sam, though, I had them running into a New Orleans team who, if you remember going back to that same season, I mean, they were that was a special team. And I have them running into a New Orleans team that kind of had a Cinderella feel to it, really. And they go down, get upset by Chris Paul and the Hornets in six games. So 2009-2010... the Blazers are just as good as they were the season before. They come out of the gates really hot. Durant is now one of the best offensive players in the league. But Portland loses Brandon Roy to a season-ending knee injury, and so they taper off to finish with the sixth-best record in the West, despite winning a decent number of games, which really just shows how competitive the West was that year. But for this next part for Portland, it's important to go back a little bit and look at what happened in the 2008 offseason. So I have Portland, Seattle, and Atlanta finishing 19th, 6th, and 4th in the draft lottery. Seattle also that year is going to retain the 24th pick from Phoenix. And so because of the sort of differences in the win totals from the previous season, Seattle's not going to be able to select Russell Westbrook at 4th, so they slipped to 6th, like I mentioned. So they're going to take Eric Gordon. They're still going to be able to draft Serge Ibaka at the back end of that draft. And Portland's going to take George Hill. But the Blazers are, again, like really just a force to be reckoned with. And they finish with the 6th best record in the West. But what's important to remember here is going back, that 2008 offseason, the Suns actually have the 4th pick because the 2005 Joe Johnson deal, that pick isn't protected, and because Atlanta finished with such a poor record the year before, the Suns have drafted Kevin Love in 08. What that means for the Blazers in 2009-2010 is that that same season, Phoenix actually goes ahead and pulls the trigger on the Amari Stoudemire to Cleveland trade, getting back Jonas Valanciunas and J.J. Hickson. That makes the Suns a much easier opponent for the Blazers. There's no more Nash Stoudemire pick and roll death machine. They go on and win, but eventually lose to the Lakers in 5 games in the conference finals. And then I'm going to go ahead and skip through a bit just because there's nothing too terribly important in the 2010 offseason, with the notable exception that because of this Suns trade, LeBron doesn't bolt in 2010. He decides to sign another, a short 1-year deal to remain in Cleveland. So that's the big thing to take away from the 2010 offseason. And also important for this for Oklahoma is that they use Miami's right to the 18th pick, which they would have had anyway before we started doing any of this tampering. And they draft and hold on to. They don't trade him away this time. They hold on to Eric Bledsoe. So going to the 2010-2011 season, this ends up, despite like a really great Portland team that goes on to win 61 games in the regular season, they have a really spirited postseason as well, featuring some really heroic performances from Kevin Durant, but run up against a Mavs team that really was just destined to win behind an otherworldly performance from Dirk. Great coaching from Carlisle. They lose to the Mavericks in the conference finals. The Mavs end up going on to beat the Cavs in 5 games in the NBA finals. In that offseason, the Cavs fire Mike Brown and hire Byron Scott, trying to persuade LeBron to renew his contract and stay in Cleveland. He does not do so. He signs a contract in Miami, teaming up with Dwayne Wade.
So wait, you're telling me that LeBron James would be trying to influence the coaching staff in Cleveland?
I find that
hard to believe, opposing counsel.
Yeah, I'm telling you, believe it or not, LeBron James actually does have a lot of say with who gets coached and by whom on his respective basketball team. So yeah,
I gotta say, this is the bit that's hardest for me to swallow.
So also moving on, 2011-2012, the lockout happens, the Chris Paul veto trade does happen, which means that he joins Blake Griffin, who was drafted in 09 by the lowly Clippers in LA. Portland has another strong season led by MVP favorite Kevin Durant. They win 49 games. Again, this is a shortened season, and they lock up the 2 seed in the West behind the Spurs. They meet Oklahoma again for another classic series in the semifinals, and Blazers get past Oklahoma again. Blazers get past Oklahoma again, and the Spurs have no answer for a really just determined Kevin Durant and LaMarcus Aldridge. The Blazers win 5 games, and so this shortened season actually really helps Miami. So now remember that they have LeBron and Dwayne Wade. They don't have Chris Bosh, who, as you remember, is still in New York. And because of this shortened season, you've got two teams that really could have used the rest. You've got LaMarcus Aldridge just having like an otherworldly series against the Heat inside. There's nobody really to contend with him. Spoelstra tries to switch LeBron off of Durant and onto LaMarcus, and that only means that Durant capitalizes on the much smaller Dwayne Wade. Portland wins in six games, and the sort of small ball revolution that people think Miami is on the cusp of is going to have to wait as Kevin Durant gets his first NBA title and Finals MVP. The next offseason, a couple of important things happen. Anthony Davis gets selected by the Pelicans, number one overall. The Hawks take Andre Drummond with a ninth pick, and there's some speculation about whether the Hawks have whiffed again because this all started with them taking Greg Oden. And the Jeff Green trade never happens, so Oklahoma takes Fab Melo, but ends up sending him to Boston for cash anyway. The rest of the draft remains the same. Important thing here in this offseason is that Miami, feeling sort of the burn still from LaMarcus Aldridge inside, actually signs Greg Oden to a minimum salary that offseason. So now you have Greg Oden teaming up with Dwayne Wade and LeBron James.
As was written.
Right, as was written. Next NBA season, the Blazers are still awesome. They actually, some things I have staying the same as real life, they still draft Damian Lillard because of the Nets pick that they had. That pick would have been protected, so you still have Damian Lillard going to Portland. But he doesn't win Rookie of the Year because his contributions are overshadowed by Kevin Durant. So you have Anthony Davis winning Rookie of the Year. The Hawks really turn it around. Andre Drummond finishes second in Rookie of the Year voting. And they had Drew Holiday, but traded him and their 2013 first-round pick to the Pacers for Paul George. So now you've got a Hawks lineup that looks like Paul George, Jeff Teague, Andre Drummond. And you've got, I have Larry Sanders for them in the middle, and I don't know, some shooters on the wings. The Thunder continue to develop, and a lot of people think they have the top-to-bottom best roster in the league, with a starting five that looks like Eric Bledsoe, James Harden, Jeff Green, Serge Ibaka, and Al Horford. They take the 2 seed that year, and they go on to actually win the West, which Seattle fans are just sick over. They meet a Miami Heat team in the finals. But Miami has the edge this time, partly because Greg Oden, who finally puts together a healthy season, is an important, as Sam mentioned earlier, rim protector for the Heat. And after a string of finals appearances, LeBron finally captures his first NBA title and Finals MVP. 2013 offseason is really not that important. I have the Cavs winning the lottery after the departure of LeBron and selecting Anthony Bennett still first overall. It's still a bad pick. 2013 NBA season. I also have injuries just being the same here. And the bug hits the Blazers, the Thunder, the Grizzlies, and the Warriors. Durant, Horford, Westbrook, who was drafted in, I guess that was 2008, to Memphis, and Curry all suffers pretty nagging injuries throughout the year, and the Spurs glide to the top spot. They meet Miami in the finals, but again, Chris Bosh is sitting at home watching the finals on TV because he's still in New York, so that means there's nobody to rebound and kick out for that now, like, infamous Ray Allen three in the corner, and the Spurs win and celebrate their championship in Game 6 on Miami's home floor. Atlanta's still improving, though, and they actually won 52 games that year.
Huh.
Yes. So everything is coming up a little rosy for the Hawks. That next offseason, Cavs win the lottery again. They take Wiggins overall. The Blazers didn't own a first-round pick that year. OKC doesn't have Dallas's pick, interestingly enough, because, again, by this point, they have reached the finals, and Clay Bennett is motivated, I guess would be the right word, inspired perhaps is a better one, sees the value in keeping his roster together. He and James Harden agree to compromise on a salary that keeps the guys together. So there is no, you know, notorious James Harden trade.
So you're saying this is not necessarily an objection, but you're basically saying because Portland drafts Kevin Durant that the James Harden trade never happens.
Right. I'm saying that because Portland takes Kevin Durant, Oklahoma ends up actually being a pound-for-pound much more successful team, and consequently, the James Harden trade never happens.
So in your mind, this basically works out for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing here is that the reason this works out for everyone is there's just more parity in the league. Instead of having teams like Oklahoma, who have Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant sort of top-heavy, you've just got a more even and consequently a much more competitive Western Conference than even we thought would have existed a couple years ago. But yeah, there's essentially a lot more parity here.
All right, so last bits from you, Mr. Johnson, wrapping up your timeline.
So the 2014-2015 NBA season, the injury bug is still bitten Portland and Oklahoma. Nagging foot issues keep Kevin Durant off the sidelines, and Horford struggles recovering from a pectoral injury. Steph Curry, who was injured the season before, though, has really flipped the switch. He's turned it on. The ankle issues are no more. The Warriors and the Spurs struggle for the top spot in the West. The Warriors end up winning the West by 4 games, and they actually roll through the playoffs and win the Western Conference. Back East, the Hawks win 54 games again. They get the second spot while Miami edges them out for home court through the playoffs. But those two teams meet for a really intense Eastern Conference Finals, with Atlanta actually shocking Miami on their home floor in Game 7. So you have a NBA Finals between a Warriors squad and a Hawks team. Again, this Hawks team is pretty like top-heavy when it comes to the front court, and guys like Andre Drummond and Larry Sanders really can't compete with Draymond Green and Harrison Barnes, so the Warriors actually sweep in what's one of the worst finals in recent memory. This 2015 offseason, LaMarcus Aldridge announces he's going to be testing free agency. He ends up in San Antonio, just like in real life, to chase another ring. Kevin Durant actually decides that he's going to release a letter on Roc Nation, which is the agency that he belongs to, sort of swearing his allegiance to the Blazers and the city of Portland. LeBron actually announces that he's going to be going back to Cleveland, which sends shockwaves throughout the league. And there's been a bunch of rumors that Russell Westbrook is really not happy with Memphis's slow pace and perhaps would like to see a change there. So that's where I have my timeline sort of ending off.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Johnson. And now we move to the bit of the court hearing where I get to decide who wins. And I'm going to do that totally arbitrarily because that's how judges do their thing. No, I will. I'm going to take a couple minutes and talk about some of the things that I like and didn't like about each of your timelines. I would say the biggest thing that disappoints me is that none of you engaged at all with the possibility that spending so much time in Portland would make Kevin Durant even more of a hipster in fashion and dress than he already kind of is.
To be fair to opposing counsel, he did have Kevin Durant posting a blog on Tumblr by the 2015 offseason, so maybe he did catch on to some of those vibes.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I was... I thought Mr. Johnson did the best job of engaging with that. What I liked about Mr. Johnson's argument is I think that there's a good unifying theory of how this sort of changes the scope of the NBA in terms of that... the argument that there's more parity as a result, and I think you would see that. I think that the, you know, Portland, they got a good core, but you know, they're not going to be so good in their second year that they get another good draft pick like someone like Russell Westbrook. You don't really have this kind of clash of super teams thing, and I would say that I find that more realistic than the argument that the Blazers were going to become a juggernaut and win 3 straight titles behind Kevin Durant. I'm not feeling that argument
Well, look at that lineup on paper and tell me it's not good enough to win multiple. You have 3 guys in their prime, a future Hall of Famer, Durant. Aldridge is, if not a Hall of Famer, probably close by the time he leaves Portland in real life. And Roy Hibbert, if you know, doesn't do much on the offensive end in terms of scoring or spacing, but is just a huge monster.
But who's getting them the ball?
Intense.
Who's getting them the ball?
You have Raymond Felton. Raymond Felton's not at in this timeline. You're leaving out the most important thing. Raymond Felton does not eat his own weight in cupcakes during the lockout, and Portland has a very solid point guard to take them from the Blake era to the Lillard era.
Let me also say, and I don't want to necessarily influence the judge here, but the other issue I had with opposing counsel's argument is that it assumed that Kevin Durant and LaMarcus Aldridge, who are both young players at the start of this timeline, mature so quickly and can handle the pressures of the postseason so instantly. And I had a bit of a hard time believing, as great as Kevin Durant and LaMarcus Aldridge are, certainly talent-wise, that they were going to have enough experience, enough sort of, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, seasonedness, to sort of, you know, handle the big stage of the NBA Finals.
I think the term is seasoning, Mr. Jones. what do you have to say about that,
Sam? 3 years to get to the Finals. It takes them 3 years to get to the Finals. They go through the trials and tribulations. They lose some games to Kobe in the Western Conference Finals. They need to learn what it takes to get up and over the edge. But I think... And, you know, the first time they get to the NBA Finals, they lose in my timeline. They do learn from that. And then by then, Durant is basically an MVP. Aldridge is a year older than him. Hibbert is just a monster on the defensive end. That it's a hard team to stop, especially once they've gotten through the Finals. The difference between them and what happened to the Thunder in real life is that they stay healthy. And, you know, the year after the Thunder get to the Finals, Westbrook blows out his knee in the first round and sort of derails their season. The year after that is the Harden is that was the season of Harden trade. The year after that, Ibaka gets hurt in the conference semis. The year after that, Durant gets hurt. In this timeline, you essentially have a healthy roster of three elite players at the 3, 4, and 5, and that's a team that is certainly capable of not only matching up with anyone in the league, including that Miami squad, which wasn't that deep by the end of that run, and easily could have been a three-peat team.
Well, and I do think I give Mr. Tiding's argument some credit for his treatment of this sort of weird proto-Thunder team that he constructed, the core of Westbrook and Blake Griffin working together. I think that would have been an interesting thing to see, especially when you look at the ways in which, you know, Chris Paul and Blake Griffin have actually played together in real life. And, you know, in future podcasts, we'll be taking a look at the whole Chris Paul situation, not to get too far ahead of ourselves. And Mr. Johnson, your read on Westbrook is that he ends up on this Memphis team?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. I think that my mind is more or less made up. I want to thank both councils for everything they put into this. These are very detailed and well thought out, and I would be very curious to see, how these, you know, what the scale of the NBA would be like today. And I think that the question that, if there's one broad thematic point that both of you brought up, which I thought was interesting, is this question about small ball, where so much of the recent years in the NBA has been built around what the Heat were trying to do in terms of playing positionless basketball. You see a little bit of it now with the Warriors, in terms of you've got Steph, Draymond, Clay, all these guys who can kind of move in and out. And in the alternate timeline where Durant ends up on a big Portland team, I think you guys are both correct in that you would see a bit of a swing the other direction, because we'd be having these big teams where you're playing a guy like KD at the 3 regularly. So I think that in terms of the broad direction of basketball history, I think that that's a really interesting point that you all both brought out. And I'll give you both each a second if you want to talk about that at all, and then I will pronounce my judgment.
Yeah, I think that both of our timelines are actually kind of bad for the NBA, in that it really takes until both of us have the Warriors being the 2015 champions, and until then, we sort of have these big lineups dominating all the way through.
This would not have been beautiful basketball.
No, it wouldn't have been beautiful basketball. You wouldn't have had all these, you know, Zach Lowe pieces on ESPN about, look how great their ball movement is, and look at this, you know, incredible set that the Heat are running. It's you know, him just diagramming a bounce pass into the post. And
I am disappointed that you guys did not address how Grantland would be affected by the various timelines here.
We only have 15 minutes here.
No, that's true. That's true. One of the things that all judges do is they set time limits and then they complain that you didn't address enough stuff. So, Miles, anything on the small ball piece?
Yeah, I think the other thing that's important, like Sam was saying, is that both of these timelines, part of the reason that they're bad is because, we unfortunately don't end up getting to see a really dominant Miami team, and a dominant because of how positionless that squad really was. And if you think about Miami as sort of a precursor to Golden State, a team where you really have to defend 1 through 9 about the same because everyone can switch, because everyone can really space the floor. Both of these timelines kind of have this really large block of time where LaMarcus Aldridge and Kevin Durant in a really big, lumbering NBA sort of takes hold. LeBron, in my timeline, because LeBron doesn't have Chris Bosh, a sort of dominant Miami team that could have won a title in that year, either after he moved to Miami or the year after, doesn't really come to fruition. And it's not really through any fault of small ball, but it's you don't have the personnel. You have a team like Portland who's much bigger and perhaps not in terms of basketball ideology better, but they're just much better on paper. So I think that's the other thing that you really miss, is you really miss that those just incredible Miami Heat teams.
Alrighty. Well, I think that's both fair on both your points. So we're going to pronounce judgment here, the first judgment here in the district court for the District of Basketball. The winner in this case, and I don't know how we're going to keep track of this. We'll add some fun sound effects in. I don't know if you want us to buy you a trophy, but it is Mr. Miles Johnson. Miles, congratulations.
Oh, Holster.
Congratulations.
The worst timeline. Easily the worst timeline. Miles winning the first episode of the show is the worst timeline.
Yes, well, unfortunately, I thought you both did a really good job with your timelines. I just like Miles a little bit more. You know what it is, Sam, is I am not as much of a Kevin Durant fanboy as you, and so
I think that's really what all of us have learned, really, is just that Sam is a huge Kevin Durant homer.
But look at that lineup! I'm not
as impressed by Finn Raymond Felton as you are.
I am going to get a big bottle of some sort of liquor and play a lot of NBA 2K8, and I will prove both of you wrong.
We got to get Royce Young on the podcast one day, and then maybe you can even up the score.
All right, well,
I'll have him be the permanent guest judge.
All right, this has been the first episode of Basketball Court. It's our new, very bizarre podcast in which we litigate the great disputes of basketball history. I'd like to thank everyone who's listened. If you're listening to this, you probably come to us through Facebook or Twitter or subscribing on iTunes. Make sure you do all those things. Make sure you retweet. Make sure you share our wonderful Photoshop cover art of Russell Westbrook wearing a judge's wig and holding a gavel. Mad credit to Mr. Tidings for that one. We will be back sometime in the next couple weeks with our next episode. And we'll sign off with a quick preview of what that case will be. In the meantime, this has been Basketball Court. Miles, thank you so much.
Thanks, Peter.
Sam, thanks.
I begrudgingly accept your thanks.
And I'm Judge Peter Andrews signing off. Basketball Court is adjourned.
Next time on Basketball Court.
Big time three-team trade, blockbuster trade. Chris Paul is joining the Los Angeles Lakers.
Now, the fans in L.A., now that's a completely different story. There's people lining up for the parade already, Jay. Chris Paul changes the dynamic of your offense, lets Kobe move around a little bit more. But Laker fans out here are greedy because the management is swinging for the fences.
I didn't veto anything.